Glasses again? Really?
Yeah, I think it's a thing I do now. I think it's a thing now. I think it's a...
You're not being fed topics through the glasses, are you? Some sort of...
Friday. Tell me something interesting to talk about so I can keep my job. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. The Rob Brown Show on the radio. It's the Fan Upstate. I will say, very simply, right out of the gate, Gamecock fans, A, I apologize. I got my ass whooped. Trust me, I heard it more at the house than there's any possibility that you people can give me today.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that a challenge?
No, because it's not that I'm like excited about it, but I do deserve it. All right. I was.
Are you Mahomes in over there? Is that what you're doing with the hands? Okay. All right.
I was embarrassingly wrong. If we're keeping it a buck with each other, embarrassingly, I was like I was the Dallas Cowboys of predicting games last week, at least in regards to this one. Not the rest. I nailed everything else. But my goodness, Gamecock fans, I owe you an apology the size of my ego.
I don't think you picked Oregon over Ohio State.
I did pick Oregon over Ohio State.
I don't think you did.
I did. And if I didn't on this show, I did on Saturday on Bet for the Cycle.
Okay, so that's kind of, you know, picking one on one and one on the other. That's
no, I did not pick Ohio State on this show. I know for a fact I didn't pick.
You're uncertain.
No, I'll go back and check the tape.
Okay.
But I know for a fact. Let me put it this way. When I put the bet slip down for the weekend, it was Oregon plus 3.5. And I'll tell you why. Because I took the half a point there. And
it was not a good weekend for me as far as football goes. Yesterday, I just didn't really want to watch football because the two teams that I pull for in college football, both kind of the same ending, you know. And one unexpected by Rob, the other expected by Rob.
Yeah.
And South Carolina, wow, a couple coaching choices that I think were the play calling choices that were kind of bad that could have got them the win. But other than that, a pretty big surprise and a freshman quarterback. I mean, you know,
we are we're going to be talking a lot about these games, obviously. The primary being South Carolina deciding that, let me put it this way. On Saturday, I was on the air. I was on Bet for the Cycle on Saturday when the South Carolina-Alabama game was wrapping up.
When did the epiphany happen when you thought, wow, he was right. Last week was just a bad game.
Let me start with this. Everything I said about the Ole Miss game is still true. It's still true. Because remember,
you're right, it was a bad game.
Remember, what I said was, you got hammered into that game because the game plan stank and your discipline was garbage. Those things were true.
Bad game.
Was the game plan good against Ole Miss?
Game plan could have been awesome, but it was not executed. We don't know.
No. We do know.
No, we don't.
It was poor.
If they played the way they did Saturday a week ago, it would have been a different result.
I don't disagree. And I will also say, as a certified knower of ball, the game plan on Saturday was open. It was opened up. They were taking Lenora Sellers and they were mobilizing the offense left and right, not just up and down. They weren't forcing Rocket Sanders into
Sellers.
Throwing the ball. They were opening the ball up to the, yes, they were utilizing Sellers, but not in a way that took him out of the game as a throwing quarterback.
They put him in danger that they didn't need to. They should have used their running game as a running game and not him. I think that was one of the main problems because the defense were keying on him. Anytime he got acting like he was going to run the ball, he was getting tore up. That's why you use Rocket Sanders more. And don't they have other running backs?
They used Rocket Sanders into the teeth of the defense.
Not enough.
Listen, Bama, running into Bama's front four, let me put it this way. Do you know exactly what game most teams – With the exception, because Vandy didn't beat them on the ground either, right? The teams that are beating Bama by taking the quarterback, playing him left and right, and throwing the football down the field towards what I said at the beginning of the year was my number one liability for this team, their defensive backfield, which is not very good. It's fine, but it's not very good. I think what South Carolina did in this game that is to be commended is they opened the offense up and they trusted Lenora Sellers as a passer, but they set him up in the pass game. One of the problems you had against Ole Miss, one of the problems you had against LSU the last couple of times out, was that when Lenora Sellers was being trusted as a passer, it was short, compact passing game with Lenora Sellers standing in a pocket. And the reality is, with a mediocre offensive line, and it is improved, but it's still a mediocre offensive line. With a mediocre offensive line, if you have Lenora Sellers playing the role of pocket passer quarterback, he's going to get hassled. And when he gets hassled, that's where he gets into problems. I go back, and I don't think there's a pass that illustrates that reality better than the interception that ended the game. With the interception that ended the game, and I'll tell you before I break this down, when I was talking with noted Gamecock fan, the person I'm married to, when I was talking with her after the game was over, and we were texting back and forth because I was still on the air, she said, he's got to learn to play better under pressure. And she's spot on with that. She's spot on with that because when Sellers gets hassled, and this is an understandable reality about a young man who just played his sixth game as a starter. He's played six games as a starter. Three of those games have been against Southeastern Conference teams ranked inside the top 15 in America. Half of the games that Lenora Sellers has played in, half of those games are to top 15 teams. By the way, South Carolina is 3-3. All three are against SEC teams inside the top 15 and good ones, right? Not like some years where you've had some garbage teams out of the SEC that get those SEC brownie points that boost their ratings up unnecessarily. LSU just knocked off Ole Miss. Ole Miss is a good team. Alabama's still a good team, right? So you're talking about a quarterback that is six games deep in his career as a QB1, and three of those games are against three very good football teams, like experienced good football teams. So I think that interception that ended the game is a pretty remarkable illustration of what the ultimate problem was. And that problem is that when Lenora Sellers is hassled, and he was on that INT, all right? It was a miscue. I've watched that play after the onside kick. By the way, what a brass stones onside kick recovery, man.
And one of the better executed that you've seen in forever. I mean, it was so good.
Yeah. So I watched that the interception that ended the game. Alabama rushed, I think, seven on that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They may have rushed. Yeah, they rushed seven, I think, on that. So they bring seven. Yeah, they bring seven. And what happens is the O-line gets overwhelmed. Rockets in the backfield. He gets flat out run over by a linebacker coming off the outside who has now got a heat seeker beep, 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 beep on Lenoris's chest. And Lenoris just heaves it. Now, there's 11 seconds left on the clock. South Carolina is out of timeouts. What I want Lenoris to do in that situation is know where his out-of-bounds out route is. On the right, on the left, deep, mid, short, I don't know. Wherever it was, you've got a sideline out route on that play. You also got a man to Sellers' left who went 10 yards and sat down, right? Sat down on that 40. There's nobody around him. What I need in that situation, and this is only something that comes with being in the fire, I need him to wing that thing either out to the out route on the sideline or I need him to hit the guy that's underneath and let that guy sprint to the sideline, get me down. If he hits the man standing, butt naked wide open on the 40-yard line, if he puts it in his chest, that dude's diving out of bounds at the 32, 30, 33-yard line, and South Carolina's kicking the football to win the game. A situation I'm very, very comfortable with. But Lenoris in that spot, it is what it is. He's a young man who has played 6 games, 3 of them against some of the best defenses in the country. He panicked. He went with the old bleep it, somebody got to be open down their offense. He winged it to the goal line, and it cost you. Now, Lenoris Sellers also hit some big throws, had some big moments, made a couple of gutsy plays down the line, couple of runs, couple of good throws that put you in a position to be down 3 and only need a field goal to win the game. So this game to me, I will start with the thing that I have to start with, which is Gamecock fans, my bad. I got that one wrong. All right. All the things I said about Ole Miss are still accurate. Your game plan stunk in that game. Your discipline stunk in that game. But my question was, were you going to be able to fix those things before Bama and do so against an Alabama team that I thought was going to come out trying to light the world on fire against you? And you took their best shot and you answered. I thought Dow Loggins' game plan was dramatically better. I thought Clayton White's defensive game plan to limit Jalen. Y'all made Jalen Milroe look regular. Y'all made Jalen Milroe look like another dude. That's a dude who, and it looks like less likely now, but that's a dude a lot of us thought, some of us still think, is probably going to be sitting in on the Heisman Trophy presentation. He won't be winning it because Ashton Jaunte is a freaking dude. But that's a dude we all thought, and he may still be, sitting in New York in the Downtown Athletic Club at the end of the year, as a Heisman Trophy finalist, and y'all made him look like just another dude. Clayton White and Dow Loggins deserve some flowers for the game plan that they put together because it was dramatically different than what we saw you do against the Ole Miss defense and against Jackson Dart. In fact, I suspect the LSU Fighting Tigers have got a thank you card in the mail this weekend to Clay White for putting the blueprint down on how to stop Jackson Dart, because the Tigers were 6.5-point dogs to Ole Miss coming into Baton Rouge on Saturday? And they got Jackson Dart looking like Anakin Skywalker when Order 66 got handed down. My man shows up at the podium in the hoodie with the hood. Did you see it? I sent you the clip of Jackson Dart postgame, didn't I?
I don't think you did.
I'll go find it and send it to you because it's hilarious. Jackson Dart rolls out to the podium. He's got the black hoodie on with the hood pulled down low. And he says the funniest thing ever. He's like, I don't understand how we lost. Like, it's hilarious.
You really changed your name to Rat Daddy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Rat Daddy Fan Club. Let's be clear. The handle is now Rat Daddy Fan Page. It's a Rat Daddy Fan Appreciation Page.
Well, I mean, all that shows up is Rat Daddy. So, I mean, yeah.
Fan Appreciation Page. For sure. For sure. I'll find the Jackson Dart photo and send it to you because it's freaking hilarious. But Clay White and Dow Loggins deserve some flowers because the game plan against Alabama was phenomenal. It was phenomenal. I think that
I see it. I found the video.
Okay. Well, I was about to send it to you. It's my man looks like he's my man looks like you better keep him out of the Jedi temple is all I'm saying.
Younglings beware.
Yeah. I think both coordinators deserve some flowers. I think Lenoris Sellers deserves his flowers. I know there's a lot of people, especially because of that last throw, that are upset and there's no clutch. Yeah, again, he's played 6 games, 3 of them against top 5, top 6 SEC defenses. That's a good kid. It's a good player. And I am going to start with, the whole show is going to start with an apology to Gamecock fans. I hope all of you told me last Friday when we were doing the show, when we were talking about the weekend, I hope a lot of you told me to off and watch that game anyway. and got the opportunity to feel something.
If you didn't watch because Rob told you not
you're
to.
You're an idiot. Let's be real. All right, you're an idiot.
I mean.
You're an idiot. If you do anything because I tell you to do it, or don't do something because I tell you not to do it, who's the idiot? The idiot or the idiot that follows the bigger idiot? Right?
Speaking of idiots, turn your brights off, people.
Yeah, that's a problem for you too?
Yes.
Okay.
The whole way today. It's like, do you not realize? So I spend, I'm driving with one hand while the other one is up over the rear view because brights everywhere.
I need you guys to stop. So,
I mean, there's a little indicator on your dash that says your brights are on.
It's blue. I've seen it. I opened the show with an apology to Gamecock fans. I opened the show with an apology to Shano, to that team, because that team had some grit. We're going to hear some audio from Shane and some of the other guys from the presser this weekend after the loss. You should be proud of that performance. Now, what is the word for the past year and a half, 2 years I have been utilizing when talking about this program? The C word. Consistency. Yeah, that's the C word you thought of, obviously. The C word.
You mean what they had through the entire season so far, except for one game?
Two, but again, we'll keep it going. Consistency. Can you take that? Because again, the Ole Miss game, it's not about, it is about the execution for sure. But at the end of the day, you got to have a plan. And you got to have a plan that makes sense, that fits the circumstances, and that works. If I go out and jump in front of traffic and tell you my game plan to stop a moving truck is to push real hard, and I go out there and I get pancaked and turned into a puddle of goo in the middle of I-85, you're not going to come in here tomorrow and
you'll get pancaked.
You're not going to come in here tomorrow and say, Rob, good game plan. He just didn't execute. No, you're going to go, that was a dumb decision. That was a dumbass move, idiot. You can't stop a truck by just standing. You want to stop the truck? Figure something else out. Put a wall up. Put one of them big yellow things out front of the Walmart up there. That's a bad game plan. I could be the best stand in front of a trucker ever, but I'm not going to win that game plan. The game plan against Alabama was different. And it worked, and flowers shall be handed out today. I don't care if you don't like the phrase. That's a good moral victory. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show continues opening today with a breakdown of that South Carolina 27-25 L on the road against the 5-1 Alabama Crimson Tide, a team that's only loss came against the Georgia Bulldogs. Nope, scratch that, against the Vanderbilt Commodores. They beat the Georgia Bulldogs, who at the time were the near consensus number one team in America. And I do want to... look at some contextual importance here. I think keeping things in context is something that is a bit of a lost art in, I was going to say sports talk radio, but like just in America as a whole. We just refuse to accept context. So let's talk about this in context. Let's start with What this Alabama Crimson Tide team that South Carolina took to the absolute limit really is. A team that lost to Vanderbilt on the road. Well, I think there's something to be said about the fact, because we all dunked on Bama for taking the L to the doors. Hey, great one. I don't want to shock anybody. You know what Vanderbilt did the next weekend? What we say, there was two things I was worried about. I was worried about Alabama, because teams that get upset inside the top five the next week cover the spread at like an 80% clip. The spread was 21.5 points. I was very concerned. And then on the flip side, Teams that do the upsetting, ordinarily the next week, don't cover the spread. It's almost the exact inverse. If you have a team like a Vanderbilt that gets a win like an Alabama, and they got to go on the road next week specifically, ordinarily, they do not cover the spread. And I know that most of you guys, I got a text next week that's like, Rob's incapable of looking at football through a fan angle. It's always through the betting angle. Well, it's because nothing's more neutral than the betting angle.
By the way, that's not true.
It's not true.
Yeah, it's not true.
It's absolutely not true.
He's just obviously hiding it from some of you.
No, I think as I say all the time, the philosophy of the show is when I sit in this chair wearing these cans behind this microphone, my job is not to be a fan. It's not to come in here and rah-rah, shish, boom, bah. If you're a fan of a team, you already know all the places you can go to have everybody kiss your butt and tell you how amazing you are. My job is to tell you what's real.
Unless you're a South Carolina fan, where this is probably the only place you're going to get some positivity.
That's also true. And you are going to get
mostly,
some positivity.
Mostly from me, but today from Rob.
No, you'll get it. You'll get plenty of it from me today. So that Vanderbilt team that beat Alabama, and you know the next week, inevitable letdown, right? You exhausted yourself. You let everything go.
Season's over. You beat that team that no one thought you could.
You won the Super Bowl, right? You just had the biggest win in the history of your program. You're going to lay it down the next week. All they did, great one, was go out to Lexington and beat the Wildcats next week. Turn around and beat Kentucky.
Did they? I've never found myself going to look for the Vanderbilt
score. The Vandy
score? Yeah, so I didn't know.
Yeah, 20-13, they went out to Lexington. And by the way, hey, Mr. Culture Change, how's that culture change going for you out in Lexington, Kentucky?
Says the guy who's wearing sunglasses.
I mean, it's almost an homage to that, right? Like, this is our culture.
You know what you're going to do, by the way. You trying to be like Bono and Elton John and some of those guys?
Bono! Of all the celebrities that wear sunglasses in the nighttime, you're giving me Bono?
Should I have said Roy Orbison?
That would have been cool.
Except to think he was blind. Street, I mean, you know.
Pretty woman.
But I think you're gonna hurt yourself by doing that. That's all I'm saying. I mean, I'm a concerned person for you.
Hear what the truth. No one can look at.
Does everything look blue coming out of that?
Mercer. Yeah, it does. It absolutely does.
See, that's so
got
you're
a
gonna.
Tint. The world's got a blue tint.
Yeah, you're gonna have a problem when it doesn't have a blue tint anymore. When you take those off.
No, we're good so far. I got the red ones coming Wednesday. I got red ones too. I got red ones, and when the orange ones goes back in stock, I'll get those too. I'm gonna have one for every outfit, bud.
Why would you get orange? You don't ever wear orange.
Swamp Rabbits wear orange this year.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Swamp Rabbits wear orange this year. So
do they have round ones?
You know what? I'm gonna look for you. You'll wear them if they're round?
Yeah.
Yeah. Team sunglasses when it's dark outside. All right. We've got we've got this Vanderbilt team that all of the sudden Clark Lee has that loss to Alabama looking like, yeah, it's still a bad loss. Let's not pretend that's not a bad loss for Bama. But after they turn around the next week, the week after the most emotionally exhausting game in the history of Vanderbilt Commodore football, they go on the road to take on the Kentucky Wildcats. They go on the road to knock off Stoopsie's Kitties. I mean, that's a... In retrospect, a pretty good win, right? And then there's South Carolina. We mentioned 3-3. And to me, I look at it this way. That is, whether you like to acknowledge that these are real or not, that is a good moral victory. I know a lot of you don't like those words. But it is what it is. You went on the road to a team that America thought was going to line you up and squarely decimate your program, and you went on the road, and granted, let's keep it a buck here, it looks a lot more compelling because of the successful onside kick recovery. 90% of the time, Bama gets that ball. It doesn't look as close as it looked, but you got the onside kick. You went out there, you executed.
Can't we call it a building block? on your way out of the hole?
That's my question.
Yeah, I know you got to look and see what they do next week.
Yeah, because again, the problem that I would argue has been what I would describe as the primary problem for Shane Beamer's entire tenure is a lack of consistency in performance. That's been the problem. You've had plenty of games like this one. You've had plenty of games like this one where you come out and you look great. The offense clicks. You put some yards up on the table. You go, uh-oh, maybe this team found a little something-something. And then you turn around the next week and it's like, oh, they lost it. They found a little something-something, and then they lost a little something-something. Where'd the something-something go? Y'all know where they put my something-something? I can't find my something-something. Like, that's been the problem. And so my question mark is, because, hey, you remember how we said going into last week, you better look the hell out because Alabama just got embarrassed and they are going to want to defend themselves. They are going to want to go on the offensive. And we said that because they lost. Not they lost. They got embarrassed. Guess who you play on the road this weekend? OU. OU. Oh, crap. OU got the hell beat out of them this weekend by their rivals in Texas.
Ohio University from the MAC?
That's the one.
Okay, that's OU.
Go Bobcats. The Oklahoma Boomer Sooners this weekend, who lost 34-3 to Texas. And by the way, Texas was like just okay this weekend. Quinn Ewers, for the first half of that game, looked like he had never touched a football
He's
before.
He's coming back from injury.
I agree. Yeah. I understand. But Quinn Ewers...
Probably you would think the pressure of knowing your backup did pretty well while you were gone would make him play a little bit better. But
Arch did do pretty well. But still, that's supposed to be a guy that's going to the Heisman run. Oklahoma got thoroughly embarrassed in this game by Texas. 34-3, and it wasn't that close. So now my question is going to be, and I don't think that this is a fair one. I don't think that this is me engaging certified hater mode. Can you do the same thing again? Can you go up against a team that on paper is more talented than you? Go up against a team that on paper has outperformed you. Can you go up against a team on the road against that team? Can you weather the storm of them wanting to make a point, to prove a point, and compete in that game? What did I say against Ole Miss? I said it against Alabama. I said it against LSU. To me, eventually you want the wins. Eventually, games like LSU, games like Ole Miss, hell, games like this one against Alabama, eventually, those have to start turning into dubs. Yeah, eventually, a bunch of close L's aren't going to get it. But can you compete? Can you show that last week was the reality, not Ole Miss? Can you show me that last week was who your team is, not 2 weeks before that? Because if the answer is yes, now I got something. Now I'm feeling a hell of a lot better than I did 2 weeks ago. Texas said, I think the Bama game makes the Ole Miss game look like the fluke rather than the Kentucky and LSU games looking fluky. I agree with you. It does look now like South Carolina's loss to Ole Miss was the fluke, not the other ways around. Can you sustain that? Back after this on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate.
You're not going to wear those tomorrow, are you? You are, aren't you?
I haven't ruled it out.
Oh.
They match the shirt. They match the polo.
Wow.
I haven't ruled it out. I'm going when the show ends today. So we have school picture day tomorrow. Okay? The whole building, it's school picture day tomorrow.
See, you can sell it as that, and I've thought of that too, but at the same time, it's a GQ photo shoot, man. You had to book your time. You get a full half hour.
Oh, yeah.
You get to bring multiple outfits.
Props.
It's as close to a GQ photo shoot as we're going to get.
Yeah, it's school picture day, but it's photo shoot day for sure.
I've done them before in the past. They're always fun, and unless you're like me and you've put on a lot of weight, and then you don't really want to do it. But I'll still have fun with it anyway.
So they've booked, and from my understanding, the way it's going to work out is that I'm going to go in there. I'll get like 15 minutes of individual photos. Then Zoe and I will have like 15 minutes of team pictures, and then Zoe will have 15 minutes of photos, or flip them around, whatever order, but it doesn't matter.
I think we actually have the full hour. I think
dope.
You booked a half hour, and I booked a half hour at it.
All right, perfect. So it's going to be like 20 minutes of one, 20 minutes of the other, 20 minutes of us both. And they'll send us two pictures back to use. All right.
And they'll be the two that we don't want.
Correct.
Yeah.
But the point here is it's school picture day tomorrow, and I'm trying to decide if I make the, as my wife called them, Jeffrey Dahmer-esque glasses.
I can see it.
Especially
when you go with the red. It's gonna be interesting.
I got red and yellow coming, and when they come back in stock, orange too. We're gonna have the full spectrum of colors here. You know what I do, Zoe, is I do every picture twice. I do every pose twice, one with, one without, and then we'll decide if I keep them as part of the uniform or not. I haven't decided yet.
And I just want to know if they can airbrush me thinner. That's all I want to know, which they can't.
So we'll see how school picture day looks tomorrow. I think they might be part of the vibe now. We'll see. Kevin jumps on the live stream, which you can too, at facebook.com/thefanupstate, at facebook.com/therobbrownshow, at YouTube, The Rob Brown Show, at YouTube, The Fan Upstate, or any of us, on Twitch, and then you can tweet any of us, should you elect to do so. You can tweet any of us at The Rob Brown Show, at Lonzo on Word, at The Fan Upstate. All the different ways to get in touch with the show. But come watch the live stream on Facebook, The Fan Upstate, or The Rob Brown Show, on YouTube, The Fan Upstate, or The Rob Brown Show, or The Rob Brown Show on Twitch. Kevin chimed in and said there are no moral victories in FBS 1A football. As my good man Mark Ryan says, that's loser mentality, .. That's Gamecock mentality, ..
I can't tell if that's sarcasm or if that's just...
He's calling Gamecock fans losers.
No, are you sure he's just not being sarcastic and making fun of the person who is his good man?
No, I...
Because, we read these things a certain way and sometimes we're wrong and are actually just being sarcastic about that person.
No, I think he's being genuine here. But let's address
it wouldn't be sarcastic about that person because he has those takes. That's all he has is hot takes.
For the sake of the conversation and the sake of the fact that I know for a fact that there are a lot of people with that thought process, let's address it, assuming that it's real. He does pop up and say, definitely not sarcasm. So, which is exactly what I'd say if it was sarcasm. Definitely not sarcasm. But...
So you're still playing us, Kevin, because there's no way that you would listen to that guy and go, that's my man. I mean, what's that say?
For the sake of the conversation, let's address this take as being deadly serious. There are no moral victories in FBS 1A football. As my good man Mark says, that's loser mentality. That's Gamecock mentality.
Are there in lower levels of football? How about in NFL? So it's only... FBS 1A.
I don't care if you are talking peewee, middle school, high school, FCS, FBS, Division 2, Division 1, the NFL, Arena League, Euro League. I don't care what you're talking about.
The XFL, UFL, whatever that's called now.
The USFL, the regular UFL, the XFL, whatever league you're talking about. I disagree with that take. And the reason why is... greatness does not occur in leaps. It occurs in steps. Greatness is not something that one day you're bad and then the next game you're excellent. Greatness is something that is achieved step by step. It is achieved milestone by milestone. And one of the things that you will learn, I've told you guys before, and I'm not shy of it. I am not ashamed of it. In fact, I'm quite proud of it. I have been to and through therapy in the past. In fact, that includes right when I moved here. I had a real bad go of life before I ended up here. And one of the lessons that I was taught, one of the things that has stuck with me through therapy was how important it is not just to set goals and not just to work towards those goals and not just to knock those goals down, because it is important. Set them, move towards them, knock them down. But the most important thing you can do in order to continue to achieve more goals is make sure that you take the time to recognize and to celebrate your milestone achievements. Not even necessarily just when you tick off a goal, but when you make progress, to say, hey, I have made this progress. I have gone a step in the right direction. I am pointed on my way, and I have accomplished something. Now, in the grand scheme of things, 5, 6, 7 years from now, if the Gamecocks are in the same place they are now, are we going to look back to October 12th, 2024, in a loss to Alabama? Are we going to look back at that game and go, wow, what an accomplishment? They went to Tuscaloosa after an L to Ole Miss. They went to Tuscaloosa against a Crimson Tide team that had lost to Vanderbilt the week before, and they only lost by 2. No, we're not going to say that. But let's look at this a different way. What if South Carolina takes everything that they learned in this loss to Alabama, and next week they go on the road and they do beat Oklahoma? And let's say that they take everything they learn in this loss to Alabama and they go win a close game against Oklahoma. And then let's say they come back to the Hizzle on November 2nd. And let's say they knock off Texas A&M and they have back-to-back wins. Then will you look through your Gamecock-tinted glasses back at this Alabama game and say, there was something there. There was something there. We learned something in that game. We took a step in the right direction in that game, because to me, the answer theoretically, hypothetically would be yes. And so to me, it is important to look at what happened on Saturday and not just look at it and go, wow, we were competitive. Wow. We made Rob Brown look like an idiot on the radio. What an accomplishment. It's not. I do it every day. But man, we went and we competed. What it is important to do is look at that game and say, we accomplished something on Saturday. Not the win, not the ultimate objective, but we accomplished something. And to figure out all the things that you did in that game that let you accomplish that thing, that let you turn the narrative that you were going to get your ass kicked into, you had Bama fans sweating bullets at the end of that game. Sweating bullets. So how? What do we do right in that contest that we had Bama fans sweating bullets? And you take those things and you grow on them and you take them into this week's practice. And then you put them into play against OU. And if you go get the win against OU, you're looking back at that Bama game. You're looking at the parts of the game plan that worked. You're looking at the part of the run-up to the game that worked. You're looking at all the disciplinary lessons that went into play from the Sunday before until Saturday at noon. You're taking all those things, and now that becomes what you do. That becomes part of who you are. That becomes part of your game week preparation. And all the things that you did leading up to the Ole Miss game, those go away. That's not your identity. That's not part of your game day run. That's not part of your game week setup and preparation. You get rid of all of that and you look at it from the perspective of Bama week. And if you take this and you turn it into a win on the road in Norman, Oklahoma, that Bama loss, even though it is a loss, that Bama loss suddenly becomes not a win, but a milestone. And if 2 years from now, South Carolina is genuinely competing in the Southeastern Conference, is genuinely in the road to be, even 2 years from now, let's say a fourth or fifth team with the shortest odds to get into the SEC title game, this Bama game becomes a platform, a launching pad for that momentum to that spot. Now, if you come out this weekend and you stink against OU, the Bama game means not a damn thing. It means nothing. But if you come out this weekend and you take all the lessons that you learned and you take all the preparations you went through that had you ready for this game because you were ready for this game and you put them into play against Oklahoma and you go get that dub against Oklahoma, now all of a sudden Bama isn't a moral victory, it's a milestone. Now all of a sudden Bama isn't a moral victory, it was a moment where something shifted within this program. But it only matters if the C word is said. Consistency. If you are consistent from last week to this week, then it's a milestone. If you are inconsistent, you come out and you go back to the same game plan you had against Ole Miss, you go back to disciplinary issues, then what happened Saturday doesn't freaking matter. So the question for the Gamecock fans is, will your team show consistency from last week to this week? And if so, then now all of a sudden, it's not just a moral victory, it's a milestone on the path to success. Not just a glimmer in the distance. Speaking of consistency, if South Carolina comes out and performs with a consistency that Lonzo performs when he excels at sports flashes, you'll win the rest of your games.
By the way, Kevin, a lot of orange on your profile, and Mark doesn't like your team.
Oh, you went creeping.
The new AP Top 25 poll is out, and three undefeated teams stand on top. Texas stays at number one, followed by Oregon, Penn State. Jumps to number three, followed by Ohio State and Georgia. Miami, Alabama, LSU, Iowa State, and Clemson round out the top 10. Carolina Panthers fell to 1-5 with a 38-20 loss to the Atlanta Falcons yesterday. Andy Dalton went 26 of 38 for 221 yards with two touchdowns and two picks. Kirk Cousins went 19 for 225 yards and a touchdown, while Atlanta racked up 198 rushing yards and three touchdowns on the ground. Carolina visits the Washington Commanders this Sunday at 4:05. Tune in Saturday at 12:30 as Furman Paladins take on the Western Carolina Catamounts. Furman versus Western Carolina. Right here on your home for Paladins football. The Fan, Upstate.
We welcome into the show our next guest. He covers the Clemson Tigers athletic department for the Post and Courier, and he joins us now to talk a little bit about the Clemson win over Wake Forest, 49-14. Your final in that one, John Blau from the Post and Courier here on the show. John, what's up, big fella? How we doing?
I'm good. How are you, Rob?
Doing very well. Doing really well. Not as good as Dabo and the gang were knocking back the boxes of Krispy Kreme after the game was over. I got to tell you, I'm a Krispy Kreme guy, John Blau. That might be my new favorite victory celly in college football, bud.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've been doing that since 2010. I guess Dabo's just a big hot now guy, and ever since he became the head coach, it's just whenever they're Winston Salem and they win, they get some Krispy Kremes, and so it's a nice treat after a win, and obviously the win itself is tasty, but I guess the donuts are even more.
I see what you did there, John Blau. By the way, real quick, because we've already had the fight that went from a ha-ha funny moment and turned into a whole segment. John, are you a Krispy Kreme guy? Are you a Dunkin' guy?
I mean, honestly, I'm from Jersey, so probably a little bit more of a Dunkin' guy.
There it is.
Krispy Kreme's fine, too. I don't think you can go wrong.
That's the take. You can have a preference, but they're fine.
I pointed out it was regional.
I agree.
And everyone here likes it. Well, yeah, all these guys are from here, of course. I'm not from here either, so I'm from Ohio, so I went with Duncan.
Yeah, that's it. Again, that's it. All right, let's talk a little bit about this game, John Blau. K-Klubnik, another good one, 31-41, 309 yards, 3 touchdowns in this one. And now all of a sudden, whispers in the wind, John Blau, that perhaps Cade Klubnik might be working his way towards an invite to New York City at the end of the year to take a chair at the Downtown Athletic Club. Talk to me a little bit about the development of Cade Klubnik since going back to the Georgia game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that Georgia game, it did not look great. But I remember Eric Murray, actually the former Georgia quarterback, did like a nice little X and O breakdown of Cade's game against Georgia. And said, you know, it's not as bad as you think. I mean, there were a couple balls, you know, catch here or catch there, you know, just kind of reading just a little bit faster or putting the ball in a little bit of that better spot. He has a much better game against Georgia. And we've seen now against, you know, defenses that obviously aren't to that level, he's absolutely been slicing them up. He's been seeing the field that much better. And that's something we heard in the preseason a lot in the spring, in the summer, that he's just calmer, more poised, seeing the game better. He's able to, you know, it's just such a deeper receiving core. He's able to just see which, not necessarily guy, you know, is the best option here. It's which defensive back on the other side is the worst and that I can pick on. He seems to just be able to figure out exactly where those weak spots are, use his legs and kind of put even more stress on defenses. And obviously he's got tons of time back there too, because his offensive line has just taken a huge step forward as well. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, you talk about the Heisman, he's fifth in QBR nationally. So, I mean, if you're in the top five of the quarterback conversation, you're absolutely in the Heisman conversation. Obviously we're going to see if he can continue this pace. 17 touchdowns, only 2 interceptions. If he does that, I mean, you're talking about 34 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. I mean, that's a great year for anybody. So, yeah, we'll see. Obviously, he's got to complete the second half of the season, but the way he's playing now, he absolutely deserves to be in the conversation among the best players in the country and potentially even at that Heisman level.
I don't disagree with that at all, but if I asked you, John Blau, to explain what has changed from last year's Cade to this year's Cade, specifically these last 3 or 4 games where he has looked like he just sees the field better, was it a change in game plan? Was it a change in the way that Cade is playing? I know Dabo kind of hit multiple times during the offseason, I want this kid to run, I want him to use his legs, and it does look like he's more comfortable doing that. What would you say, if anything, has changed about the offense or about Cade himself that's brought out this new improved edition of number 2?
Yeah, again, I just do think it's a lot that's around him, though, too. I mean, I just think the receiving core, you're that much deeper. Antonio Williams wasn't available all last year. Bryant Wesco's a new, you know, dimension. Obviously, he missed the Wake Forest game, but T.J. Moore, Troy Stellato, there's just so many more guys that are getting open and making plays for him. And then the offensive line is protecting him that much better. And again, you combine that with a guy who's a junior. He's now in his second year as a starter. He knows where he's looking, his reads, progressions. He's able to kind of diagnose things faster. He's able to just take what the defense gives him. And especially, again, going back to the run game, I mean, if you drop 8 versus him, he's running the ball. Last year, he might drop eight, and he's just kind of staring at it, trying to figure out what I should do here. And he's a little tentative in terms of just taking the ball and going. I think he kind of has that confidence, probably partially because he's more physically developed now, too. I mean, I think he was about 205 pounds last year. He's 210, 215. You know, he's not fumbling the ball. I mean, he had 5 fumbles last year. He's got 0 of those that he's lost thus far. And then, you know, 9 interceptions out of 2 picks. I mean, he's just not making mistakes. He's taking advantage of what's there. The run game, like you said, is a big part of it. Obviously, that stresses defenses in terms of they have to be more disciplined in their rush lanes. They have to account for him somehow. Maybe we might start to see a little bit of quarterback spy eventually, but yeah, again, I just think it's all the pieces around him and all the pieces kind of coming together for him mentally in terms of his understanding of Gary Riley's offense. I think it's all coming together at once, and obviously it's led to a lot of production for him, but the offense in general as well.
Film off of 19 carries, 108 yards and a pair of touchdowns on the ground. And I think what stands out to me, or one of the things that does John Blau, is how much the improved game of Cade Klubnik has impacted Phil Moffa. I go back to that Georgia game, and the Bulldogs were kind of able to attack number seven and keep an eye on him and try to corral him. Now as Cade becomes more of a threat, both with legs and arms, it feels to me like Moffa's seeing lighter looks. He's seeing spots where there's maybe one less defender in the gap that he's trying to attack. It feels to me like the improvement from Phil Moffa game to game, at least to some degree, Cade Klubnik feels responsible for.
Yeah, it's obviously a pick your poison type of situation. I mean, obviously in the Georgia game, I think Georgia put a lot of effort towards stopping Phil Moffa and saying, Cade Klubnik, you're going to beat us. And I don't think he was really, you know, able to, again, make the plays. Everybody was kind of a little just off. Obviously, you know, Dabo Sweeney goes back to that first pass of the game that he short arms to Moffa that could have went for 20, 30 yards, never got momentum. But now, obviously, yeah, that passing game has a ton of momentum. You're pushing the ball down the field. You're, you know, you're kind of picking secondaries apart. Then you have to, you know, devote more assets to trying to deal with that, and also deal with, again, we haven't seen this much from defense. It's going to be interesting to see if they try to change, but maybe potentially asset the, you know, spy in Klubnik to make sure he's not getting out and running for 30-yard gashes. So, yeah, no, that absolutely does lighten the box. It allows Phil Moffa to get going. I think it's been, you know, a little bit of a interesting, you know, kind of development for him through games for Moffa. Like, it seems early sometimes he's not quite really stacking up the big yards, but later in games all of a sudden he's kind of breaking through. And I think that's probably because, like you're saying, I mean, I think they loosen up defenses a little bit, and then all of a sudden there's just way more room for him to run. Those guard tackle pulls have been beautiful, kind of getting around to get numbers on Clemson's side, on one side or the other, wherever they're pulling. So, yeah, I mean, I think they definitely do work off of each other. And Phil Moffa, obviously a very experienced senior back, you know, who's going to be able to find those lanes and pick up lots of yards.
Talk to me a little bit very quickly before we look ahead to next week, John Blau, about this defense. 146 yards through the air allowed to Hank Bachmeier in his passing game, 87 surrendered on the ground overall. This to me felt like a very good, though not necessarily dominating, defensive performance. Was this pretty much just a go out there and execute game? Do you think we're going to see this same performance moving forward with Virginia Louisville and Virginia Tech up next?
Yeah, Wake Forest is just a weird offense to play against, though, with that mesh. And I literally felt like they're having a meeting back there every now and again. They're just standing there for 5-6 seconds holding the ball before Bachmeier makes a decision. I think that took a little bit of time to adjust to. Obviously, they had a couple touchdowns in the first half. In the second half, they got absolutely nothing going at all. Obviously, Clemson able to dominate that line of scrimmage and kind of blow up that mesh. You know, DeMonte Capehart had one where he threw a guy. The center was able to really blow up a run play. I mean, they were able to do that, you know, really force the issue there, force some turnovers. Yeah, I wouldn't say it was dominant, but it was pretty dominant in the second half. So maybe not the whole game, but second half pretty dominant. And yeah, I would think that would carry forward. This is a good defense. Maybe they're not great all the time, but they're at least very good with the potential to be great.
Looking ahead, you got Virginia coming up this weekend, then it's Louisville, Virginia Tech, and then the next top 25 team is Pittsburgh. Through those four, before you get the Citadel and South Carolina to wrap it up, Virginia, Louisville, Virginia Tech, and Pitt, is there any one of these teams that you think poses the biggest threat to Clemson at this point?
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, obviously Louisville's been up and down. Virginia Tech and Pittsburgh, those two games being on the road, I know Virginia Tech's been kind of slow to get going with that atmosphere in Blacksburg. You know, it seems like Virginia Tech's playing a little bit better. I think that could be a little bit of a challenge. Obviously, Pittsburgh has a pretty good quarterback. You know, they have the potential to score points on you. And obviously, that's at their place. I would say those two road games, but, you know, again, coming back to things we've said before, I mean, Clemson's going to be favored in every single game moving forward. They should win all of those games, Pittsburgh, Virginia Tech, any of them. And so if you drop any of those, you're probably out of the playoff conversation. If you do what you're supposed to do, like they did at Wake Forest this past weekend, you're in the playoff potentially. And it may require winning the ACC title game. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. But it's not a very strong schedule. You know, obviously, again, like you said, Pittsburgh's on the slate. They're a top 25 team, but who knows if they will be by the time they play them. It's kind of, yeah, it's not a schedule that you look at it and say, maybe these are really overly daunting. Whether, you know, it's Pittsburgh, Virginia Tech's the harder game, I'm not sure. We'll see it kind of how it unfolds, I guess.
John Blau covers the Clemson Tigers for the Post and Courier. He joins us every Monday at 8:40. Pardon me. You can find him on X at John Blau, JON_BLAU. John, my man, appreciate it as always, buddy. Go get yourself a Dunkin' Donut. Treat yourself a little bit.
See if I can find one.
Yeah, tough to do. I respect it. John Blau for the Post and Courier every Monday morning, 8:40, right here on the Rob
Brown
Show.
There's one in Simpsonville. There's probably one around here.
Yeah, where's John right now?
You don't know either.
I don't either.
But I know that
if I won Duncan, I got to go research it, unless it's the one right by my house, which has gotten plenty of my business.
Wow. Okay? Wow. Okay?
For the record, the Duncan's closer to my house than the Double K is, so they've gotten more of my business.
And I still would go out of my way for duck donuts.
I will also do that. You're damn right we're going to talk about baseball today because the National League Championship Series underway. The Dodgers hammered the Mets last night 9-0. The American League Championship Series gets its start tonight. The top two teams over in the AL, by the way, the two teams with the bye in the American League, both combating for the ticket to the World Series over on that side of the equation. All of that coming up tonight, and we are going to address the games of the weekend and get you set up for the championship series on both sides coming up later today. We got to get to NASCAR. We had a little breaking news last night out of the world of NASCAR that changed the drivers that have made it to the third round of the NASCAR Cup Series playoffs. We're going to talk some racing later on in the show. And, of course, a ton of collegiate and national football league over the next couple of hours, not couple, trace 3 hours of the show. So I hope you'll stick with us. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo with you as we start hour number two of the Rob Brown radio program. All the different ways you can touch with the show. The Renewal by Anderson of the Carolinas fan phone is open 844-326-3663, 844-FANFONE. You can shoot us a text at 71307, 71307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N, FAN, F-A-N, and we will read them on the air. You can tweet me at The Rob Brown Show. You can tweet the great one at Lonzo on Word. You can tweet everybody up in here at The Fan Upstate if you want to come at us in that direction. And, of course, don't forget about the Ray Memorial Hotline. Go to the Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Go to the Fan Upstate page on the Audacy app, which is free to put on all your digital devices. Go to the Fan Upstate page. On the middle of that page, there's a little microphone button. You click on that little microphone button, and you can drop a 60-second voice message that comes directly to the great one. And I go to the Audacy app. Go to the Fan Upstate page, click on that microphone button, drop that 60-second note. We got a couple over the weekend. One I'm going to screen during the break from Drew in Greenville, South Carolina. That came in, great one, Saturday night at 11:09 p.m. I'm very excited to hear what Drew had to say. Also got one from Greg in Lyman at 6:50 a.m. on Friday morning.
I'm going to guess the Saturday night one had something to do with the Ohio State game because that's about, you know.
That or.
When it was over.
That is about when it's over. It is very possible that that is Ohio State-Oregon related, which we're going to talk about that game in a few minutes. It's also very possible that that's a Gamecock fan who had to get over the disappointment but wanted to point the cannons directly at me. And by the way, deserved, earned, justified, warranted. Gamecock fans, the line's open. I take my crow medium rare. We're going to talk about all of that and more. But
It's 7:04 in the morning. You're less than 56 minutes away from having to get clocked in and locked in at the office. And when you do, you're going to be talking sports. And if you're going to be talking sports, you got to know what's going on in the world of sports. And if you've got to know what's going on in the world of sports, don't you worry. Lonzo and I are here to inform you, educate, enlighten you with this. Hit him with the old double meow. The old twofer meow.
Just sending out a rallying cry for some, because we haven't talked about a certain team yet. So.
Haven't yet. Am going to. Did exactly what they were supposed to do. We're going to come to that here in just a minute from right now, but let us dive right into the water cooler cheat sheet. The top three sports stories you need to know before you get to the office this morning with item number one. Your new AP Top 25 poll is out, and it is nearly a mirror image of the AFCA coaches poll. Here's how they are stacked up. Ladies, gentlemen, boys, girls, yes, it's true. It's damn true. Army and Navy are both ranked. Hell yeah! Navy sneaking in at 25. Michigan at 24. 23 Army. The boys are here. The service academies are electrifying right now. 25 Navy. 24 Michigan. 23 Army. Just ahead of Army, Illinois checks in at 22. SMU. SMU at 21. And Pitt at 20. Couple of ACC squads inside the top 25. Mizzou at 5-1 is 19, up a couple of spots, down 9 positions after their second loss of the season, are the Ole Miss Running Rebels, number 18. 17, Kansas State gets to bump up a notch after knocking off Colorado this weekend. Indiana is still undefeating-feated, dude. That's you know why they're undefeated? Because they win. Google them. Boise State. Ashton Jansey is a dude. 5-1 at number 15. Texas A&M up a spot to 14. BYU up a spot to 13. Despite not losing a game, Notre Dame does fall another position down to number 12. Tennessee, after a close win over Florida, down 3 spots to 11. Clemson will stay put at number 10, 5-1, Clemson inside the top 10, but they were unable to move up despite a dominating victory over Wake Forest. They get jumped not once but twice. The Iowa State Cyclones now ahead of the Clemson Tigers by just 2 total points, by the way, which is like one dude's vote somewhere way down the line. LSU moves up 5 positions after their win at home over Ole Miss. They are now number 8. Bama stays put at 7. Miami stays put at 6. Georgia stays put at 5. Ohio State takes the L to the Oregon Ducks, but great one. It could have been way worse. You fall only 2 spots down to number 4.
You shocked by that? Because I thought it would be somewhere between 6 and 8.
I thought they were going to put you at least behind Georgia. I really did. I thought they were going to look and go, you know what the biggest help in the world was for you? Vanderbilt in South Carolina.
I was going to say, I think the biggest help was people actually watched that game.
Yep.
I mean, that could have went either way.
Georgia Georgia losing to Bama, but Bama turning around and losing to Vanderbilt and then getting into a absolute slobber knocker with South Carolina helps Ohio State stay inside the top 5 at number 4 after the L. Penn State does jump the Buckeyes up to number 3. Oregon has 6 of the 62 first place votes after they win at home, Autzen Stadium, over the Ohio State University Buckeyes. Texas blast Oklahoma. 56 of the 62 first place votes belong to the Longhorns, who stay at number 1. Over in the coaches poll, Tennessee is number 10, Clemson at 9, up a pair of spots, LSU at 8, up a couple of spots, Bama also at 7, Miami also at 6, Georgia does leap Ohio State in the coaches poll. The Buckeyes fell 2 spots in the top 25, they fall 3 spots in the coaches poll down to number 5, Georgia is at number 4. Penn State leaps Ohio State and Georgia to number 3. Oregon second in the coaches poll with 2 first place votes, and Texas has 53 of the 55 first place votes in the coaches poll, so they check in at number 1. Over in the AP poll, Vanderbilt just on the outside, 68 first place votes. The Doors are a dub away from being ranked. Yes, those Doors. Clark Lee's Vanderbilt Commodores, a vote away from being ranked. Nebraska, Arizona State, Oklahoma, Washington State, Iowa, Texas Tech, Syracuse, Arkansas, Utah, Louisville, USC, Liberty, and UNLV on the outside looking in for the AP poll. Oklahoma, Arizona State, Navy, Utah, Vandy, Syracuse, UNLV, Iowa, Texas Tech, Liberty, Washington State, Memphis, James Madison, and Tulane just on the outside looking in the coaches
poll. I just looked it up. The first CFP is November 5th.
Okay, a couple weeks out.
Yep. Because I definitely would be interested if it would have been out this week, how they would have ranked it.
Do not disagree at all. Let's go to item number 2. Scoreboard in the NFL included a game for the Carolina Panthers divisional game last night as the Atlanta Falcons came a-calling to Charlotte, North Carolina, and it went pretty much about, I think, how you'd expect it to with a banged-up Carolina defense. 38-20, your final, the first game in a minute that the Atlanta Falcons weren't pressed to the wall inside the fourth quarter of this one. Kirk Cousins, 19 of 30, 225, and a tutty, but it was the ground game for the ATL that won in this game. 105 yards from Tyler Allgeier, whatever. He had a touchdown on the ground. Bijan Robinson had 95 yards on 15 carries, averaged over 6 yards per carry, had a couple of tutties as well. The Falcons, 198 rushing yards, and if it wasn't for 2 Kirk Cousins sacks that resulted in negative 5 yards, the Falcons would have crossed the double century mark against the Carolina defense. Andy Dalton, 26 of 38, 221, a pair of tutties, a pair of picks in this one. Carolina did rush the ball for 114 yards, 92 of them from Chuba Hubbard, but they did not punch one in on the ground. 78 yards of receiving for Deontay Johnson on 6 grabs. He had a touchdown. Xavier Leggett had 23 yards, but one of them a 13-yard reception inside the painted grass to score one as well.
I watched the game and I'm thinking, you know, I never thought they would win, but there were moments that looked pretty good, all things considered. I mean, the fact that they, you know, half the team is on IR.
Seriously, dude, it's a mass unit right now. I mean, guys down everywhere. Look, and we're gonna hear from J.C. Horn coming up during the audio blitz in an hour from now, his thoughts on this game. And I don't ordinarily do this because NFL football players get paid way too much for me to feel bad for them. But I kind of listen to JC's comments and I'm like, I feel bad for this cat, right? Like this seems so damn banged up. I don't know what they can do right now. This team's so jacked up right now. 38-20, your final in that one. The other NFC South matchup, Spencer Rattler got his first start for our New Orleans Saints. And the Saints defense let Tampa put 50 freaking one up on them. Karma from weeks 1 and 2, where the Saints made everybody think maybe they're okay. No, they're not. They're not. As I've said a whole bunch of time.
Looked promising going into halftime.
It looked bad. First half had like 150 yards and a pretty good completion percentage. And by the way, I say all that, Zoe. Olave took a concussion and again on a ball that he caught, but then he fumbled and dropped it. You put that one on. He also had, Juwan Johnson coming across the middle and put one right in his hands that he dropped. There were, I think if I recall correctly, There were four drops in this game from New Orleans that coulda, shoulda, woulda been big gainers or at least middle gainers. Olave catches one. Rattler's over 250 yards. Juwan catches the one across the middle in the first half that ended a drive. Rat's probably closer to 270, and one of those picks comes off the board. Spencer Rattler was, and I again, you guys know that I assign credit and blame to the offense, not the quarterback. The offense let Spencer Rattler down in this game. As a Saints fan, I'm calling it as I see it. The wide receivers in particular let Rattler down in this game. Spencer Rattler's final number was 22 of 40, 243, a touch and a pick. Rattler's number should have been, Lonzo, probably closer to 26 of 40 for 290, two touchdowns and one pick. There was one pick that was just a bad throw. It was just a bad throw, but as I had to remind some of my Saints fans yesterday, my guy is making his first NFL start behind a patchwork offensive line on effectively 5 days of notice. Yeah, he's not going to look like Dan Marino.
I was going to ask you, did he have better protection yesterday or when he played for South Carolina?
No. See, none of the above. It's just bad. All right, very quickly, let's go through.
I just meant that because he's used to not having protection in front of him.
Oh, no, for sure. He had to lean on that experience yesterday, as the Saints offensive line is a hospital ward right now. Item number three. Baseball playoff championship series underway. We got started with the National League Championship Series last night, and then we didn't get started at all. At least the New York Mets did not. 9-0. The Dodgers hammer New York in game number one. Kodai Senga was the starting pitcher for the Mets. Left after just four outs, he surrendered two hits and three earned runs before he got yanked. He threw only 30 pitches, and only, I think, 20 of them were strikes. At the end of the day, something was wrong with Kodai Senga. Remember, Senga pitched one game in the regular season. He threw one against the Braves all the way back in July, made his postseason debut in the Mets divisional round series in game number one, and he had the Mets fans super hyped, but he was clearly not ready yesterday. Do not know if we'll see Senga again in the postseason. Effectively turned that into a bullpen game for the New York Mets and effectively cost them the game because the bullpen could not keep up with the Dodgers starters. Jack Flaherty, 7 innings pitched, surrendered just 2 hits. Cade Six threw 98 pitches. The Dodgers racked up 9 hits in this one. No dingus. Didn't want him. Didn't need him. 3 RBIs from Mookie Betts. Shohei had a two-hit day, including an RBI. Freddie had a two-hit day, including an RBI. And Enrique Hernandez had a two-hit day, and he had a couple of other one-hit days sprinkled in there for the Dodgers. All of the sudden, and this is what I wondered, for the teams that caught the bye, and I was talking about the Phillies, who are gone. I was talking about the Dodgers, who came into this hot. I was talking about the Guardians, whose bats woke up and gave 5 against the Tigers. And I'm worried about the Yankees, who have made it to the ALCS, but have done so despite the fact that their bats have not woken up at all. This is a tale of four cities when it comes to the four teams on the bye. Philly gone, Dodgers hot on the NL side. Guardians hot, Yankees cold, but both in the championship series on the American League side. The Dodgers strike first. They're up 1-0 in the NLCS over the Mets. 2 games tonight. The NLCS will have game 2 start off tonight at 4:08 p.m. out in Los Angeles. The Yankees will host the Guardians tonight at 7:38 in game 1. Cobb versus Rodon is your matchup. Neither one of these pitchers with a postseason win so far in 2024. So that's where we are. That's where we stand. 844-326-3663. 844-FAN-PHONE. That's the number to the Renewal by Anderson of the Carolinas fan phone. The text line 71307. 71307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N, and join us on the stream on Facebook, the YouTube, and the Twitch, The Rob Brown Show and The Fan Upstate right there for you. Love to have you join the live stream. Lonzo and I are back to continue talking college football after this on The Fan Upstate. Ohio State, Oregon was everything that we wanted it to be. And then a little bit more. Great one. I don't know about everything we wanted it to be. Okay, that's fair.
I mean,
that's fair. It's not everything. Well, it's not everything you wanted it to be. It's everything that everybody else wanted it to be. What a game. What an absolute game that was.
What a mistake at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Will Howard wants that one back. That one hurt his feelings like a lot.
Oh, it hurt more than his feelings. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one he's going to be sitting with for a very long time.
Well, hopefully you'll have a chance to make up for it.
Situational awareness is everything, dudes and dudettes. You kids out there, my dudes out there, I need you to keep those words in your head forever and always. Situational awareness means everything. If you are not situationally aware, you are going to find yourself in some real bad spots. And that is ultimately what happened to the Ohio State University Buckeyes. The situational awareness of one Will Howard just wasn't there. And for the record, the chance was there. I mean, honestly, the chance is there. Now, I also have to say this. Lonzo, I have given you a bunch of crap. I've given the Buckeye Nation a bunch of crap about Ryan Day and the fact that you brought up at one point on this show, if Ryan Day loses to Michigan again, he's done, right? Especially this year.
I was going to say especially this year with how Michigan is playing this year, for sure.
If he loses to Michigan again, he's cooked. And I've said a number of times, that's ludicrous. And I'm not talking about ludicrous. I'm talking about ludicrous.
Yeah, if he shows up in the studio like the commercial, we will do an interview.
I was kind of hoping he would. That's ludicrous. To me, that's a ludicrous take. And I've told Zoe this many times. Losing that game is not losing that game that way, with the exception of not having your quarterback coached up to handle that moment and that pressure, kind of like we talked about with Lenora Sellers, losing that game on the road at Autzen, there's nothing wrong with that.
As I told my wife, this is a Kansas City game, and that's what it ended up being. Whoever has the ball last more than likely is going to win, even though Ohio State had the – if it was Patrick Mahomes, they would have won. But, of course, he's not. He definitely made a mistake. I just hope he's not getting a bunch of hate over that. Because I think that's a mistake you can learn from. And at the moment, it's just like your heart sinks as you watch the...
When he took off, yeah. I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah, it's like, go down. It doesn't matter.
You have any timeouts. You were cooked.
And also,
as soon as he crossed the line of scrimmage, I'm like, ball game.
I think they had it set up because they thought the clock had stopped and it hadn't after the penalty. And I think that kind of messed them up because they lost, I don't know what, like 12 seconds or something because of that.
So
it was kind of a meltdown at the end.
One of the things that I was going to say there about why I do not look at Ryan Day and go, what a bum after this loss.
By the way, I didn't know that either. So now I've learned about the clock doing that
is because Dan Lanning was a mind was a mastermind in the way that he handled that. So if you didn't see the end of the game, effectively what happened was this: Ohio State's got the ball, they are crossed midfield, they need a field goal in this spot, right? And the Ducks allow the Buckeyes, who need 10 yards. I think 12, if I recall correctly, Zoe, you need, what was it, like 8 to get a first down, 12 to get into field goal range?
Yeah, something like that.
And so Dan Lanning sends out his defense. Ohio State sends out the offense. Dan Lanning waits until Ohio State's team is set up, ready to run the play. And then Dan Lanning sends a 12th defender on, intentionally so. Sends on a 12th defender. So obviously,
Wait, so you're saying, has he said he did that on purpose?
No, but I'm telling you he did. And I'll tell you why he did. It makes complete
sense.
Well,
he would never admit to it anyway, but I get what you're saying.
Why not? I would. He played the rules.
It sounds like a little conspiracy going on.
I don't think it is at all. Here's what happened.
Because that would be, I know it's not cheating, but it's kind of cheap.
It's absolutely not cheating.
It's kind of cheap, though.
I mean, you would feel that way if it's done against you, and if it's your coach that does it, what a stroke from a mastermind.
I still would think it's cheap.
So let me explain what happened. Dan Lanning allows the Ohio State offense to get set up. After it's set up and ready to run the play, Dan Lanning has another defender run onto the field. This does a couple of things. It effectively, I'm not going to say prevents, but for Ohio State to run a play that would have gotten them into field goal position, they would have had to do it against an extra defender. They would have had to do it against an extra zone spot. And so they run this guy on. Lanning knows it's an illegal substitution penalty, which allows the play to happen, but also is decreasing dramatically the odds that Will Howard does something that gets the Buckeyes into field goal range because you got an extra pass defender back there somewhere. And if nothing happens, it's a 5-yard penalty. Ohio State is going to have 7 to 8 seconds run off the play clock, which, correctly, he assumed, would put them at about 6 seconds. And the absolute best case scenario for Ohio State, they beat an extra defender. Worst case scenario for Oregon is they beat a defender. Best case scenario for Oregon, nothing happens, and they have effectively sacrificed 5 yards to Ohio State in return for burning 7 seconds off the clock. Ohio State with 5 yards for free is still not anywhere near. They're still 7 yards short of a career long for the kicker. And on top of that, with all due respect to the horse chestnuts, Ohio State doesn't exactly have a pristine record when it comes to kickers needing to hit walk-offs right now.
Not lately.
Not lately.
Sure. Those seconds probably.
Won Oregon the game.
It did. It did, because he would have had, what, 2 plays?
Yep.
Which would have got him you know, down in range.
If Howard does the exact same thing, but he does it with 12 and a half, 13 seconds on the clock, he's down with 5 seconds left. He clocks the ball,
I think,
and Ohio State's got a shot.
I thought they had a timeout left.
I don't think you did.
I'm pretty sure they had.
But even if you did, it still won them the game.
There was just no time to call the timeout because there was no clock left.
Yeah. So because of the addition.
I don't believe it, by the way. Everything that you just laid out makes perfect sense, but I don't believe he did it on purpose.
That's because you're a good person who expects that everybody is going to play squeaky clean into the intent of the game and the rules. The reality here is that's a masterstroke from Dan Lanning. That's a beautiful moment of coaching from Dan Lanning. Yeah, I am going to willfully and intentionally violate a rule in order to create a situation where you guys are at a distinct disadvantage to me, and it would work like a dream. Will Howard goes out. He drops back to pass on the second to last play. There's nobody available. It's a dead play. You sacrifice 6.5, 7 seconds in return for 5 yards, or I guess you sacrifice 5 yards for 6.5 to 7 seconds. And now the situation you find yourself in is Will Howard's got the ball. There's 6 seconds left. And by and large, unless they do something special, what I'm doing on defense in that spot is what? I'm going 3 high safety. I'm putting 2 guys on the outside. I'm putting 2 guys. I want your foot on the sideline. And no matter what wide receivers run at you, I want you between them and the sideline, right? So I got 3 back. I got 1 man in the middle spying on Howard. I'm putting guys on the outside, on the sideline. Do not let anybody get out of bounds on this play, right? And unless Ohio State does something special, most plays take 6 to 7 seconds to run. Because, again, you still needed 7 more yards to kick the longest career field goal of the kicker. So they really needed, realistically, more like 10 to 12. That's a 6-second play. So by running the extra defender out there, Dan Lanning says, we're going to make it nay impossible for you to pick up 7+ yards. And we're willing to give you 5 in order to burn half of what is left on the play clock off the play clock.
We're gonna give you that 5 seconds.
Okay, I looked it up and I was right. They did have another timeout.
Okay, yeah. I mean that's fine. But even still,
because I'm yelling, get down, so you can take the timeout, and time just ran out.
Even if that's the case, you have still got to get the ball 8 to 9 yards down the line to make it a long field goal for the win. You got to get it 8 to 9 yards down the field and get down and get the timeout called in 6 seconds. That's going to be tough. You're talking about, let's say Will Howard gets the ball out el rapido. 2.5 seconds. 2 seconds. I got 4 seconds for the ball to be delivered, received, downed, and a timeout called. That's tough, right? Dan Lanning played the rules. I mean, it's the definition of gamesmanship by Dan Lanning. It was a masterclass in that spot. And the thing is, even if you see it coming, even if you watch the extra guy come in, so there's nothing you can do there. If you're Ohio State, all you can do is run the play you had set up and hope you get the completion and get the 5 yards stacked on the end of it.
You're not going to convince me that it was on purpose. In the end, quarterback needs to be more self-aware, as you pointed out.
So you think, hang on, we'll come to Will Howard, whatever. You think Dan Lanning had 11 men on the field and just went, oh, we only have 10, and threw another guy out there. Like, I respect you wanting to give the benefit out. Here's the thing. He didn't do anything unethical. He played the rules brilliantly.
First of all, is he the person who sends out players? No, that's what assistant coaches do that.
In this case, Lanning was standing there and was shoving the guy on the field. He's like, go.
I still don't believe it.
I mean, that's fine. But I'm telling you that's what happened. This is not a question. This is a statement. Dan Lanning said, if I trot a dude out there, I'm sacrificing 5 for 6 seconds. I'm giving them maximum 6 seconds to run a final play. And it's brilliant. It's brilliant football coaching. It's brilliant. And Dan Lanning deserves a pat on the back because he strategeried himself into that W by taking advantage of the rules. It's just brilliant. All right. We'll take a look at some of the other big games from the weekend when we come back on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate.
New life.
The Rob Brown Show continues. It is the Fan Upstate. Rob, the great one, Lonzo with you here on a soon-to-be, I hope, I assume. I'm looking outside the window. I think we're going to be in good shape. Lovely Monday morning. Let's get to it. We got a lot we got to get to.
You know, I love that the pictures are on the side of the building, but it distorts a little bit the day.
It does.
So it's hard to tell
exactly.
See,
here's the thing. It is more important, great one. I gotta get you to Rob Brown ego levels. It is more important that the people outside see our face than our faces see the people outside. Okay? This is just a way to bring awareness of the vast amounts of handsome happening right behind that window to the folks driving Garlington Road.
I'm already there because I pulled up this morning and I'm thinking, the TV cannot be on because the TV on, you can see it through the pictures. We don't need that. So maybe I'm going to have to send an email and ask that the TV be turned off every night. So when I pull up in the morning, you know, I don't see that through the pictures.
I mean, it does, you know, it is, again, very important that we see us, you know. That's just how it works. All right, let me get this out of the way. Gamecock fans of South Carolina, I owe you an apology. I owe you an apology because last Friday on the show, I said to you, don't watch this game. There's no sense in being sad. It's kind of like when I'm at the house at night and I'm watching television, the lady friend's gone to bed. I'm up in the living room. I'm watching whatever late night sports. I'm going to be up till midnight tonight watching ALCS baseball. When I'm at the house watching the sporting events of choice and the TV's on and, you know, I'm like half watching and half doing show prep. At some point, inevitably, I'm going to hear, in the arms of the angels. And you know what I do? I immediately leave the room. I immediately leave the room because sad, one-eyed, homeless puppy dogs make my heart sad All right. They just do. I am a giver. I donate to local animal shelters.
That's not unusual. I mean, don't most people feel sad?
No, I'm not saying I'm special.
Okay, all right.
I'm saying that, like many of you, when I'm watching television and I hear Sarah McLaughlin, by the way, is there a reputation you want to have less than Sarah McLaughlin's? You hear a Sarah McLaughlin song and you know everyone in a 15-mile radius is about to be sad as hell. That's not the rep you want as a performer, right? But if I hear Sarah McLaughlin's angelic voice wafting through my home, I know it's time for me to get up, go to the other room, grab a nice beverage, take a stroll to the other hand, go check on the wife, make sure she's sleeping okay, go pet my dog, go pet my cat, be like, you lucky sons of biscuits, you. Hey, look at these dogs on the TV, all right? That's how you could be if it wasn't for me. You're welcome. I know it's time to leave the room because I know.
Wow. If it wasn't for me.
My dog got adopted out of a cardboard box in the Walmart parking lot. Yes, if it wasn't for me, my dog would have been a Walmart dog.
Dude, my cat's a rescue. I always get rescued.
Yes, you should. Your cat should know.
So, really? So yes. I should go tell my cat.
You're welcome. You're damn right.
My cat's still trying to kill us. So get out from underneath my feet.
When I hear Sarah McLaughlin on the television, I know it's about to be a bad time had by all within a radius, right? Like, I will mute the TV so that I don't accidentally make my wife sad in the other room. All right? So that was my assumption. I assumed when this game kicked off Saturday at noon, I was just going to walk over to the record player and put my Sarah McLaughlin vinyl down and drop the needle and just play sad, abused animal music for the next 3 hours of my life. And I said to you all on Friday, don't watch this game. Don't watch this game. The same way I would tell you, if you're watching television at night and Sarah McLaughlin's voice comes on the speakers, whatever's on the TV, don't watch it. Don't watch. Don't tune in. Don't pay attention. Go find something else to do for the next 45 seconds, or you're going to be very, very sad, boy. And I don't want you to be sad, boy. All right? I want you to be happy. So go do something else with your time. Go garden. Go cut your grass. Take the wife to the antique store. Take the husband to the shooting range. Whatever. All right? I'm sorry. I'm embracing stereotypes. That's my bad. All right? Point is, go find something better to do on your Saturday afternoon than watch this game. And if you did that, one, you're an idiot. Don't listen to me. Why would you listen to me? Don't ever listen to me. I'm a moron. All right? I'm a gigantic idiot. Don't listen to me. But if you did not watch this game because of me, yeah, it's on you. But I still have to, anyway, apologize to South Carolina fans because the read was wrong, dude. The read was just wrong. I thought the Gamecocks were going to require this, and they didn't. I thought I was going to come in here today and do an entire segment backed by this song. I thought I was going to come in here. Do you know a Gamecock fan who's struggling today? Around the listening audience, thousands of South Carolina fans find themselves beaten down, depressed, on the verge of a mental breakdown. But you can help. For the low, low cost of just leaving them alone, you can give Gamecock fans a chance. Reach out, text, call, email, tweet your favorite Gamecock fans, and just let them know your thing. But you know what they said? They looked at me and they said, hey, Rob Brown, bleep you. Absolutely not. The boys brought it on Saturday. So I owe an apology because, see, what I thought happened against Ole Miss. Well, scratch that. Let me be real clear. I'm still right about my breakdown of the Ole Miss game. The game plan sucked. The discipline sucked. All right? The game plan sucked.
You are so bad at apologies. You really are, because this entire, starting out in the 6 o'clock hour when you supposedly apologized, I'm sorry. I was right. But I'm sorry.
I was right.
Yeah, but that's not,
I am sorry, and I was right.
That's not an apology, though.
No. Let's be clear.
It's not really an apology.
No. It is. But what you think is happening is you think I'm apologizing for my Ole Miss take and my Bama take. I'm not. I was spot on dead ass right about the Ole Miss game. I was wrong about the Bama game. I was spot on dead ass wrong about the Rebel game. I was wrong of telling Gamecock fans they did not have a choice on Saturday.
I apologize on behalf of the university.
No. Stop. You're wrong. You're very wrong. Here's what I'm saying. I was right about Ole Miss. I was wrong for telling Gamecock fans that you were going to get your asses whooped on Saturday. I was wrong for that. I was wrong for telling you didn't have a shot. I was wrong for telling you Bama was going to run you up out of Bryant Denny. I was wrong for telling you that this was going to be a program-defining L in a bad way. I was wrong. I was dead 100% top to bottom, left to right, up to down wrong about South Carolina, Alabama.
How's
I was right about Ole Miss.
How's that feel?
But it's fine. I've been wrong before, like three times.
All right.
Like three times. But
not in the same decade.
Not in the same decade. No. Okay. I was wrong. Right. I think I was wrong in 2008. I think I was wrong in 2017. And now I was wrong in 2024. So, you know, I'm spreading them out. Spreading the love. Look, jokes aside, for like 30 seconds or so, I am proud as hell of the performance turned in on Saturday by South Carolina, because I was very concerned that that loss to Ole Miss was a moment that a team could be demoralized. That's a moment that a team gets in the locker room and guys start splintering. It's a moment where the fan base is raucous. They're unhappy. They're upset. It's a moment where your coordinators are getting blasted in the public eye, by the media, by the fans, whatever. That's a moment where, realistically, a team could fracture. A team could look itself in the mirror and go, you know what? I'm just in it for me now. I got guys out here trying to make their NFL career. I got guys out here trying to audition for wherever they're transferring to next year. That's a game that Ole Miss lost. That's a game that a team could implode. But that's not what happened. In fact, the criticisms that I had about this team after the Ole Miss loss, which were correct and valid, were fixed for Saturday. I said last Saturday, yo, the Gamecocks have bad offensive game plan. They fixed it. In fact, not only fixed it, but the things I said last week I was bothered by in the game plan weren't part of it on Saturday. The things I said I'd like to see out of the game plan, I did see on Saturday. I want to see offensive line blocking procedures going left and right, not straight ahead. You can't block into the teeth of the Bama defense. You have to make them move left and right, not north and south. You did that. I said I want to see Lenora Sellers be trusted to make a play down the field with the football. We saw that. I wanted to see Lenora Sellers having his legs utilized east and west to set up north and south. I saw that. I said I want to see Nick Harbor involved. Granted, I still haven't seen Nick Harbor as involved as I'd like. And I know it's a development issue, all right? The kid's coming over as a track star. We're 6-7 games in. He's going to get progressively better as a wide receiver. You saw the freak athleticism on that last touchdown to get that ball to come down to toe tap, put the tutty on the board, and give the Gamecocks a chance. I saw that. I said I want to see Rocket Sanders run the ball. What I don't want to see is him just chug-a-lugging off guard every single time. Give me some versatility in the run game. I saw that. All the concerns I had, but it was more than that. I said I got to see a disciplined football team. I got to see a team that doesn't panic. I got to see a team that doesn't have a big moment down 27 and come up and make a jackass move that costs them 15 yards. I didn't see that. All the things that I said were problems with Ole Miss, and all the things I said I thought were going to carry over and create a world where Alabama beats the ever-loving you-know-what out of you, those things got fixed. And so that's why I've said the spot for me now is the C word, consistency. Can you take last week and bring it to this week? Because you took the Kentucky game and you carried it to the LSU game. And you should have won that football game. We all agree. You should have won that football game. I think it. Lonzo thinks it. I'm relatively sure even Colin Diesel agree with us on that. That South Carolina should have won that game. But then you turn around and granted, you ran it up against Akron. You better, right? But then you absolutely bleeped the bet against Ole Miss. And I said, here are your problems. It's a bad game plan. It's a lack of these specific ways. And it's a complete lack of discipline. And all those things were out of the window on Saturday. My question is this a one-off moral victory? Is this a one-off moment that we look back and we go, yeah, that was a fun Saturday, but who the hell cares? Or is it consistency? Is it the C word? Are you able to take that performance and bring it to Norman, Oklahoma? Are you able to take that performance and go do the same thing against the Boomer Sooners, who are not as good as Alabama? We're going to find out. Saturday is a massive game for Shane Beamer because he will prove that he can keep that consistency, or he will make me believe that he cannot. And that's a benchmark. Also benchmarks, the top of the hour is when Lonzo blows your mind with his sports flash.
Yeah, that counts.
Hey!
I was going to say consistently bad and then I proved it. Game one in the NLCS was a dominating performance by the LA Dodgers, ending with a 9-0 shutout win over the Mets. Dodgers had 9 hits, including multi-hit games from Shohei Ohtani, Freddie Freeman, and Enrique Hernandez. Game two is this afternoon at 4 p.m., while the ALCS starts tonight at 7:38. The new AP Top 25 poll is out, and 3 undefeated teams stand on top. Texas stays at 1, followed by Oregon and Penn State. And Ohio State is at 4, Georgia at 5. Miami, Alabama, LSU, Iowa State, and Clemson round out the top 10. Make sure you tune in this Friday at 7 p.m. as the Burns Rebels head to Eastside to take on the Eagles. It's Burns versus Eastside right here on your home for Burns Rebels football, The Fan, Upstate.